Welcome back. For those of you joining us just now, I'm Ethan Elkind, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Wanted to let everyone know we are podcasting the show. You can find out more information on our website via kalw.org. You can also listen to past shows there. And if you have a show idea for us, we always love to hear listener ideas for shows. You can drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org. You can also call us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And now we're going to turn our attention to the severe budget cuts proposed for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, abbreviated as NOAA, which is the leading science and research agency in the United States. Now, last month, a leaked memo from the Office of Management and Budget detailed drastic reductions at the Department of Commerce, which houses NOAA. And according to the document, the Trump administration is looking to slash NOAA's funding by more than 25% from its current $6 billion level for the 2026 fiscal year. Now, a key part of the cut comes from the elimination of the Office of Oceanic and Atmospheric Research, which would see its funding slashed by 74%, effectively removing all funding for climate, weather, and ocean research. So to discuss the impact of these unprecedented proposed cuts from the Trump administration, we're so pleased to be joined by Craig McLean, who is a former top chief scientist at NOAA. He dedicated his 40-year career at the agency to driving the exploration, protection, and improvement of the world's oceans. And along the way, he championed scientific integrity, diplomatic collaboration, and marine conservation for the benefit of future generations. So welcome to Your Call's One Planet series, Craig.
Ethan, thank you very much. And I appreciate that your listeners might have interest in these subjects. It's very important what we're up to right now and what we're facing.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of those stories that it's easy to sort of or dismiss this in the laundry list of proposed cuts, because I think people really don't understand how NOAA affects them on a very much a daily basis, and in some cases on a sort of life dependent basis. So let's just start with the basics about NOAA. Can you talk about what the agency does and how the science research there affects all of our lives in ways we may not even fully understand or appreciate?
Your last comment, I think, is the very essence of what the challenge is in front of us, Ethan, because we have a lot of noise coming out of the Trump administration with the rather flippant decisions that are going hard left, hard right, backwards, and very few things going forward. And NOAA can get lost in the noise there. What most people recognize NOAA for is the National Weather Service and your daily weather forecasts. NOAA does not necessarily advertise that the National Weather Service is front and center as part of that agency. And often the Weather Service has the name recognition and the public understanding of its value, but not realizing that it comes from NOAA. And as you said, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So maybe if I could take a step backwards just a little bit, I'll start with where NOAA came from. NOAA was a result of a presidential panel studying ocean and atmospheric science back in the late 60s and recommended in 1970 to create a dedicated agency that would take weather, atmospheric science, and all ocean components with it. So ocean mapping, the National Marine Fisheries Service, the National Weather Service, and some newly created components to study the atmosphere and ocean interaction were developed. And that's what became this ocean and atmospheric research enterprise that you had mentioned the Trump budget by the leaked memo is proposing to eliminate. The activity that then flowed since 1970 was to build renewed ships, aircraft, sensors, autonomous vehicles in the ocean, satellites, buoy systems, and many laboratories in order to study what these data were collecting and spoke to and interpret them to generate scientific conclusions. And that's what we came to know as climate science. So in other words, the interaction between the ocean and the atmosphere, and then the converse, the atmosphere and the ocean, is what we know today as climate science. That's not what we set out to learn or explore or discover. We just wanted to see what that relationship was. But when we see that relationship, we realize how it is a vital threat to the fisheries of the world, certainly the stable fisheries of the United States of America, the environmental consequences of what we are doing to the atmosphere and the oceans are high. Ocean acidification is taking place right in the shores of Northern California in your listening area. There are many components of your local listening area that are impacted by this. So NOAA doesn't only forecast the weather, and what many people may not realize, it's not Dr. Bob or Dr. Sue in the broadcast booth alone that deliver to you your weather. It's all based on information that NOAA has generated from satellites, from ocean buoys, from land-based meteorological stations, radars, and the like. So weather, fisheries, and a healthy coast, a healthy ocean, and an understanding of our climate, which is not just a casual passing subject of discussion. It may be something of concern for people who live on the shore and are realizing the increased storm frequency is causing damage to the stability of shorelines. The fires that California has seen based on precursor droughts and drought situations, heat waves, inundation of rain by what some have called the Pineapple Express, but these atmospheric rivers of rain that come and inundate parts of the West Coast, California certainly. So there's a lot here that's more than just forecasting the daily weather. So let me just hold up there and see, Ethan, where I could dive in deeper for you.
Well, there's a lot there, and the weather obviously is a critical component. I know there's a lot more to it than that, and I'll just note for KALW listeners, our studio engineer, Kevin Vance, he relies on NOAA and weather.gov for the weather breaks that we get every morning. So this is something that we rely on just right here at KALW. Well, let me ask you about the proposed cuts to NOAA that I detailed here, just introducing this segment. How concerned are you about them? Can you talk about what, if enacted, what they would mean?
Well, first off, Ethan, the proposed cuts remind me of where we were in the Trump first administration. The first administration budget that Trump put forward was basically dismissed by Congress, both parties, Democrats and Republicans, as being so out of bounds that they gave it no credibility, no credence, and no attention. And the Congress did what the Constitution requires. They generated their own budget. The process is supposed to be that the president informs the Congress of what he and perhaps one day she might want to see in a budget, and then the Congress creates it. So Trump's first budget was so far out of bounds, it was rejected basically as a whole. Now we have a very different Congress. So the question is, what will Congress do? What will the half of the Congress do? And I can address more of that shortly. But the cuts that are proposed would basically wipe out, on the research side, the further progress of atmospheric, weather, and ocean research. So the first and most immediate hit would be improvements to our storm forecasts, our ocean forecasts. So mariners would become locked in the current state. If you just stop researching, you're left with what you have as a steady state. However, it goes deeper than that, and very troublesome, as far as I'm seeing this, very troublesome, is that the rush of the Trump administration to rid the federal civilian and uniformed services of personnel has been so unguided and unwise. NOAA lost last week 27,000 years of experience as roughly 1,000 plus employees left the agency. Basically, their careers were extorted to be terminated by the president and his policies, and people left the agency. And the years of experience they took with them is going to be very difficult to replace. So while we might stop research according to the Trump budget and leave climate out, no more climate research, and arrest basically the levels of ocean research and certain meteorological research components, you could say we're left with where we are right now in 2025. But when you take away that depth of experience, you lose that stewarded class of people who are going to rise up under the tutorship of those individuals to take those more senior and more advanced positions. So we really go backwards. And that's what alarms me tremendously for the day-to-day security and future of the American public. So the weather forecasts become more vulnerable and will be less precise. The personnel generating those forecasts can no longer rely on some of the research products that were in development, but that are also used today in the weather forecast, that we don't just generally throw a knife switch and bring a research product into live use in an ocean forecast, weather forecast, et cetera, but they are gradually introduced in order to determine their complete efficacy and utility. So much of that in tornadoes, hurricanes, fire, drought, all of that is put in jeopardy by these cuts. The research community contributes to the operational components of NOAA, whether it's in fisheries or contributing to our understanding and protection of marine sanctuaries, at all levels of the agency's activity. So we really stand to be losing. And I think the whole premise of making America great again, I just personally pause to ask, when did we stop being great? But that's obviously a political question that people will have different views on. But in terms of scientifically, we have never stopped leading or being great in the international community, in addition to the domestic community. I had the responsibility to represent the United States at a UN-based organization of 150 nations that coordinate global oceanographic campaigns and activities so that we share information, share measurements, and develop common standards to collect that information. The United States has always led in the international ocean community, in the meteorological community, and also in the ocean mapping and hydrographic community. We're putting all of that in jeopardy, and we will most assuredly cede that leadership to other nations that would love to compete with us more so economically.
Yeah, such a risk and so much at stake here. We're speaking with Craig McLean, former top chief scientist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. He had a 40-year career there. You're listening to Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Ethan Elkind, and I'm going to go ahead and open the phone lines now. If you have concerns about what these cutbacks and the layoffs at NOAA might mean for you and your life, if you're dependent on some of the data that is produced there, or if you have questions about what could be done in the face of these cuts, the number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to yourcall@kalw.org. We'd love to hear from you if you do have questions. Now, Craig, we've talked about the proposed cuts, but as you mentioned, that already the agency has lost a lot of people. More than 2,300 people have been fired and then were refired through this, I gather, through the DOGE process. What do you, have you observed any changes in terms of the impact of these cuts on the publicly accessible data? How have things changed so far? And what are you hearing? I'm assuming you're in touch with some former colleagues at the agency. What are you hearing about the kind of work that has basically been lost now because of these firings?
Well, I think the starting point for the cuts with the DOGE type of approach was something that might work in the private sector, might not. Something that might be popular in the startup world, but it's not wise. In fact, it's remarkably damaging in the public provision of services to the citizenry, where there really is no commercial substitute for what is being provided to the public to manage the nation's fisheries, to map the world's oceans, to map the navigation corridors and the harbors of the United States, to be forecasting the weather, et cetera. All of those government services are slowing down. They are short of people to do the normal work. An example would be that the rather heroic Weather Service forecasters are continuing their work, although they are no longer completely staffed, and people cannot keep this up indefinitely. Perhaps you saw recently, the end of last week, I believe it was, a letter from all of the five past directors of the National Weather Service warning of the harm to come because of the shortage of people and resources for the Weather Service, just one important mission of NOAA alone. There are fisheries that have not opened on time, and because of biological circumstances and also the shifting of the location of fishery populations, these fisheries opening late have consequences to the fishing community and the industry itself, but also those communities within which they reside or where their catch is brought in and landed ashore, and then also to the consumer community as well. So a lack of people, a lack of contracts, I think something that's very alarming to me about the ridiculous inefficiency of these cuts and this approach is that contracts of $100,000 or more are being reviewed by the Secretary of Commerce. I would think this man would be far busier than to have to review contracts of $100,000 or more. But because of those delays, and you just might wonder, an agency the size of NOAA, how many contracts does one have that are $100,000 or more? There are thousands in at least a month, but in some cases more often a week. So there is a lot of commercial sector talent that through contract helps NOAA achieve its mission. But those contracts are being stopped. People are being sent home from the work that they've done for NOAA, as well as NOAA employees being sent home. So the confusion that we have here is at what I would consider to be, it's an absolutely mind-numbing, ridiculous abuse and destruction of an otherwise functioning but needing attention federal system. I just want to touch on the note, if I can, that you probably have many listeners who would be saying, but don't we need to right-size or reform the federal government? Yes, we do. And there's a rational way to do it. This is not the rational way.
So we have a caller in from Oakland, Carol, dialing in. Carol, welcome to your call.
My question is, will this impact the air quality indexes that we're able to now access quite easily, given, you know, the reductions that Trump wants to have in terms of standards and everything? So, yeah, that's my question. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. No, thank you, Carol, for that question. Yeah, Craig, sure. Does our air quality monitoring, is that going to be at risk here?
Yes, Carol, thank you. I think two ways this would concern me. One is the scientific attention through federal dollars to be monitoring air quality. But then also you could see the attack on the regulatory process at EPA by the Trump administration, which could serve to reduce the quality of the air, reducing those standards. So I think we have two problems. One is in the ability to measure and the scientific forecasts of air quality. When those science budgets disappear, and that's happened both at NOAA, which does this work, and EPA, which does this work, but then also attacking the standards on fuel efficiency, exhaust, and we could see what's happening to, for example, renewable energy policies under the current administration.
So Craig, I wanted to ask you, I know you're not in the politics game, but given how central the data and the scientific research is that NOAA puts together for the public in so many key ways and that so many industries rely on, do you think there's going to be a pushback? What do you think is needed to push back? And how likely do you think it might be that these cuts could actually make it through Congress, you know, beyond what DOGE has already done, which is arguably illegal and in some cases unconstitutional, but just the proposed budget cuts, do you think there will be pushback?
From what I understand the conversations to have been within the advanced business community, and when I say advanced, I don't mean to insult small business communities or such, but large corporations. What I understand that conversation to be thus far is, if you have a problem with what is being cut, go and talk to the cabinet secretary of the department within which these federal programs reside. And if we have broken something, we'll go back and see if we can fix it. So as long as those are the conversations happening where the senior voices of companies number one, two, and three go to their elected representatives, their senators or their congressmen, that's a self-contained conversation. The congressman then goes to the secretary of the department to see whether he or she can solve the needs of their constituency. What's missing is the reach of the voice of the public to go to those same senators and congresspersons and say, you're breaking our country. And while you may be afraid of Donald Trump's voice in order to get reelected, or Elon Musk's money in order to get reelected, you darn well better be afraid of my vote, because you need my vote before you can get past those other two. Mm-hmm. And I think that's starting to happen now. We see it in the polls and the reaction of the public to these changes that the Trump administration is making to our government and the provision of our government's services to the public. But that voice needs to be sustained and get louder. This can't be just a fashion of the season. We have to sustain the expression of the public's concern so that the elected representatives know that they might need to change their direction come midterm elections. We have to be patient to realize that that's probably going to be when we start to see a turnabout. Now, you mentioned, Ethan, some of the legal cases that speak to ignoring the Constitution, ignoring the legalities of laws thus far promulgated, passed, and in place, including these budget restructurings. As long as the Congress remains moot and does not raise these issues, there is no consequence, but the Congress needs to get active and get in the game. The cases are taking time, but I think most of those cases, we will see that Trump's ambition is to push however far he can to see what the extent of executive authority is. And our traditional understanding of the Constitution has that well defined. I think as of late, it's pretty confusing when you listen to him.
We'll have to see how these cases unfold, but that could have a big impact, I would imagine. I do want to go to caller Greg in Palo Alto. We only have a few minutes left. So, Greg, welcome to your call. What's your question?
Hello. It's not so much a question. It's that, you know, these cuts are taking place across the board on virtually every government department and agency. I have no idea what Trump and the people that surround him, their end game is. But if this is allowed to go on, we're going to end up with a dysfunctional or minimally functional government, which is not going to serve the people of this country. So I don't think people really fully realize the kind of world we're going to be living in when the government is reduced to a non-functional entity.
Yeah, no, Greg, thank you for that comment. I guess it does raise the question then, Craig, of what do you think is their end game here?
The end game is just looking to reduce the budget of the federal government, but there's nowhere near a sufficient level of attention to what is the cost and consequence of the reductions that they're making. So just getting the numbers down, while there might be some very distant thought of merit to that, none of us wants to be a debtor nation. We do have to bring the national debt down. We have to look out for the economic security of future generations. But doing it the way we're doing it now is not the way to do it. It's only looking at half the question, the bottom line budget number. It's not looking at what services are being denied to the citizens. And just watching anyone's news broadcast, some broadcasters, some stations more than others, you get greater transparency into where those services are being lost throughout this governmental system. It is a very concerning time for us. And unless we see a turnabout here, I'm with your caller, the gentleman, Greg, from Palo Alto. I'm very concerned for what the nature of this country is going to be looking like in the future for the benefit of the citizens without these services.
Well, it's such an important topic. We're so glad to have you on to talk about these impacts to NOAA. Just briefly, we're almost out of time here, but I just have to ask, what do you think is going to be needed to put this agency back together, just very briefly?
There's a small group of people looking at that right now. We don't necessarily need to rebuild NOAA exactly as we found it. NOAA was, as I said, started in 1970, and with a layering of laws that have come into force since then, we can modernize the entire science structure and the entire provision of services to the public. But we have to engineer that thoughtfully. We have to look with informed people at the table discussing how to do this. But just blind cuts with the chainsaw is not the way to do it.
Yeah, very well said. Craig McLean, former top chief scientist at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, thank you so much for coming on, explaining what the agency does and what is at stake and what could be done to fix things. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That is our show. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can visit our website on the KALW.org page. You can also follow us on social media and email any show ideas and feedback to yourcall@KALW.org. Malihei Razazan produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Ethan Elkind. It's Your Call. We'll be right back.